Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Palmemordet. Netflix-serien del 2 med Schiaffino Mosara.
Sveriges statsminister Olof Palme är död.
90 000.
Ja, det är mord på Sveavägen. Hörde de säga att det är Palme som är skjuten?
Mordvapnet med säkerhet i en Smith & Wesson, en revolver kaliber .357.
Inte ett svar. Finns inte ett svar. För jag har inget.
Polisen söker en man i 35-40-årsåldern med mörkt hår och lång mörk rock.
Välkomna till podden Palmemordet som idag görs av mig, Tobias Henriksson på PRS Media. Innan vi kör igång med dagens avsnitt vill jag påminna er om att vi fortfarande är lika tacksamma för er stöttning ekonomiskt. Om du vill hjälpa oss att kunna göra en ännu bättre podd, gå in på patreon.com/palmemordet och donera en summa som podden får per publicerat avsnitt. Det är alltså patreon.com/palmemordet. Fler sätt att donera på finns i avsnittsbeskrivningen. Idag ska vi återigen titta närmare på Netflix-serien Den osannolika mördaren. Och det ska vi göra tillsammans med en riktig expert på just film och tv. Det är nämligen dags för lyssnarfavoriten Schiaffino Skiff Mosara att höras i podden igen. Skiff slog igenom på bred front för oss palmenördar i och med sin serie We Got This och har flera gånger tidigare medverkat i podden. Då Skiff är från USA talar han helst engelska trots många år i Sverige. Därför kommer vi att göra intervjun på just engelska. Vi hoppas att ni hänger med i vad som sägs och att ni har överseende med att min utrikiska bitvis är lite rostig. Min första fråga till Skiff blev såklart hur planerna för en säsong 2 av We Got This ser ut.
I mean, I can say that it's extremely unlikely that it's going to happen. Unfortunately, well, we had some issues with SVT that are, you know, really not worth going into. But ultimately, I can say that for me, the idea of doing a season 2 kind of really became, it just sort of became something that I didn't even want to do anymore about a month or so ago after I learned that one of our main actors, Anki Larsson, had passed away. I think that was sort of, I guess I sort of held out hope that I could probably do it somewhere else. But then when she died, I was like, ugh, it just really took all the wind out of my sails. I was like, I don't even want to do it anymore if she can't be in it.
I read about her passing in Aftonbladet, I think it was, and also on your Facebook page. How was Anki to work with? What's your impression of her?
Oh, she was amazing. Anki Larsson is one of these great character actors who has been, you know, in a number of plays and TV shows and movies for decades, and it really hasn't been until like maybe the last 5 or 10 years that I think most of Sweden started to realize who she was. And I think there were a couple of different shows that helped that to happen. The Saltsjön, I think, was one where she kind of, her name kind of became more known in Sweden. And then she did a really great series with a good friend of mine named Patrick Eklund called Revenge. And then after that, we did We Got This. And it was just, she's so talented and so dedicated to her craft. She was really kind of actually, from a writer's perspective, she's probably one of the scariest actors to work with, because she's one of these actors who, once she gets the script, she's going to come at you with like a million questions. And if there's a hole, if there's a plot hole in your story, Anki Larsson is going to find it. But the great thing about her is that when you work with her, she forces you to be better, because she'll find something wrong with your script and you'll be like, damn it, she's right. I have to fix this. So in that sense, it was always very helpful. I loved working with Anki. She was a great person.
And without her, it just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah. I mean, that character actually came about really mostly because of her, like, you know, just sort of questioning, like, who is this person that, you know, and it forced me. I knew I had to, that character had to be so solid, because I knew that she would come in and ask a ton of questions. And yeah, I mean, theoretically, I could write around a character passing away, but it's like, I don't know. I didn't feel the same about it. You know, that group of four, me and Alex and Ulla and Anki, you know, the whole show really was resting on the shoulders of these four actors being able to drive the story forward, and eliminating one of them from the bunch just felt, you know, I don't know, it just didn't feel like something I wanted to keep doing anymore.
But aside from We Got This and the very unlikely season two, what are you working on at this very moment?
That's actually part of what led to me sort of, you know, kind of walking away from the idea of doing a season two, was essentially the international success of We Got This has led to, well, it's led to a number of interesting things. I mean, the show's playing at about somewhere between 30 or 40 different countries at the moment. I'm getting messages from people in Brazil saying like, oh, we love your show. I'm like, wow, okay. So basically the short version is that it led to a number of opportunities, one of which is a TV series, an American TV series that I'm working on right now for Warner Brothers.
Ooh.
And then I just signed a deal to start working on another American TV series for a big production company over there that I've just started to kind of break ground on. So, you know, it's kind of hard to compete with America when it comes to, you know, how much they're willing to pay you to write a TV series. You know, so it's, you know, it got harder for me to spend time on the idea of season two of We Got This when someone is saying, hey, we'll pay you to write an American show. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll do that.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, Warner Brothers, it's quite a big company. I mean, you can't go much bigger than that, can you?
No, I don't think so. It's been a great experience, actually. They've been really fantastic to work with. They you know, I mean, they pay well, but they expect a lot, but they're very clear about what it is that they want. And it's been a really good creative collaborative process so far. It's been fantastic.
And given the circumstances with your job and so on, has there been any time to focus on the Palme case or maybe another TV series that came out, Den osannolike mördaren, based on Thomas Pettersson's book?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I was not planning on watching the show until until you reached out and asked me to do this interview, because one of the things that I already know how I feel about the Scandia Mountain theory, and I know quite a bit about Thomas Pettersson's book, which the series is based on. So I wasn't expecting to be surprised by the show in any way. And also I know that the thing that kind of annoys me about Netflix, like, they don't care why you watch the show. They just care that you watch it, right? So all these people who are tuning in to watch it so that they can know how to be angry with it, Netflix doesn't give a shit if you like it or not. You watched it. That's all that matters. It counts as a view. So I guess I was sort of like saying to myself, you know what? I'm not going to watch this. I don't want to get sucked in. But then I started to get a little aggravated by the things that I was reading, especially the international press writing as if this show had more or less solved the Palme murder. And I was just like, ugh, you gotta be kidding me. And then you sent me an email asking if I wanted to come on and talk to you. And I was like, okay, you know what? Deep down, I do, actually. I do want to talk about this, and I do want to watch it, and I do want to get angry about it. So that's why I'm here.
Okay. Because I was thinking, because you work with TV shows and movies and stuff, I mean, you must see it from slightly different perspective than the regular guy looking at it. But if we just look at it as a TV series and the casting and the environment and stuff, is it good? Is it any good?
It's hard to answer that question in a yes or no answer. I'll say this. The sets and the costumes are fantastic. The cinematography is lights out of sight, wonderful, genuinely wonderful. And not just wonderful, but also really smart. Like, they made some really, really smart choices as to like where they decided to position the camera so that they could avoid filming anything on Svea Vägen that was too, you know, that didn't fit in with 1986, right? So as far as like the overall like creation of the universe and the way that it looked, I would give the show an absolute 10 out of 10. It looks brilliant. With the exception of Hans Holmér, what's his name? What the fuck is his name?
Oh, the guy he plays in Mikkel Persbrandt.
Thank you. Yes. The wig was a little, I don't know, whatever. I can't fault him for that. It's hard to find good wigs. but yeah, the overall look of the show is fantastic. They did a really, really good job with that. I happen to know quite a few people who worked on the show. I know one of the directors. I know a lot of the people who worked behind the camera. There were one or two actors from We Got This in the show as well. Some of which I knew some of them already were in the show before I started watching, but then there were a couple who popped up who I was like, wait a minute, I know that guy. Why do I know? Oh, wait, he was in my show. So that was fun. But as far as like the show itself, the story, the scripts and all that kind of stuff, to me, that's a little bit of a different story. And I don't even really mean necessarily, there were a lot of things that I saw in the construction of the scripts that has nothing to do with how I feel about the Stig Engström theory, that I think, they just didn't work structurally within the context of a story. You had this dueling nature of the Stig Engström storyline and the police investigation storyline, which, you know, should lead to a scenario where these two separate storylines kind of complement one another. But they don't. They're always kind of in competition with one another. So much so that they actually needed a third, completely different storyline which was the Thomas Pettersson and Mathias Jorgensen line that comes in, just to further complicate the narrative. You know what I mean? So in an ideal scenario, these three storylines would kind of weave in and out of each other. Whereas in this one, it almost feels like towards the end of it, you're watching three completely separate shows.
Yeah, in three different timelines. And yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean.
Also, I think they made a bit of a mistake in... I personally wouldn't think the show could have been better had they decided to play more of a cat and mouse game with the audience, right? Sort of a, did he kill him? Didn't he kill him? They sort of blow their wad right out of the gate, and then they spend the rest of the show attempting to convince you that they're right, right? This was possibly the least suspenseful option they could have gone with. And kind of breaks the cardinal sin of screenwriting, especially when it comes to a mystery, which is that you should always allow your audience to be part of the discovery process. You see what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
You should be inviting them in to ask questions. You shouldn't be answering questions that they haven't even asked yet.
And the first thing that happened in the series was Stig Engström running away from the murder scene as portrayed as a murderer. Because that was one of my questions. I mean, what do you think of the eagerness, so to speak, about pointing out Stig as a murderer? Because I don't see it in the Thomas Pettersson's book. Maybe a bit in the Filter, the magazine, but I mean... what do you say about it from a TV movie perspective?
Well, if you're asking about my from my sort of screenwriting perspective, I would say that I just think they could have done a better job of like pulling the audience into a mystery, right? So, okay, let's say, for example, I'll give you an example. Imagine in the first scene, we see the Palma murder, right? But we never get to see the killer's face. You establish the gravity of the loss, right? The crime of the century, so to speak. And now you have a situation when the story starts to play out, as we see in the show. Now you've got Victor Gunnarsson pops up, the PKK line pops up, Christopher Pettersson pops up, you throw Stig Engström in there, and now you're in a situation where you're taking the audience and you're pushing them and you're pulling them and you're twisting them and you're forcing them to ask questions and pushing them in multiple directions, keeping them guessing all the time as to who the real killer is. You create this sense of mystery, you create drama, you create suspense, you convince the viewer of something, you know, that, and then you just rip it away from them, and then you give it back to them, and you take them on this like psychological joyride. Like that's, you know, one thing that it made me think of, and I thought this was kind of sort of fascinating and somewhat ironic. You know, you have Netflix, which is the streaming channel that more or less kind of landed on the map with a documentary series called Making a Murderer, right? And that show did precisely what I'm telling you right now, where they kept like, he didn't do it. Oh shit, maybe he did do it. No, he didn't do it. No, he did do it. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. And they keep pushing you and pulling you over the course of, I don't even remember. It was like 10 episodes, I think. I forget.
But I mean, even to the point that you might believe that he did the first thing he was accused of, but not the second thing. I mean, I really understand what you're meaning there.
Yeah. But in this case, they basically told you who did it, and then they spend the next, you know, however many minutes of time within the course of like five episodes just trying to prove that they were right. Also, here's the other big mistake they made. So here's from a storytelling perspective, it's very common and also quite effective to create the scenario where you essentially begin at the end. Right? They're giving you the ending first.
The murder itself.
Exactly. They're going to give you the ending first, and then they're going to go back in time, and they're going to walk you back up to that moment. right? It's a very specific storytelling technique. It works really, really well sometimes. But the problem is that if you don't hold something back, if you reveal too much up front, when you finally have made your way back to the actual ending, you have nothing to offer anymore because you've already given everything away.
So from, let's say, a cinematic point of view, it isn't necessarily the best thing you've ever seen then.
I would say from, like, cinematically, just if we're talking about images, it's beautiful. It's fantastic. But the storytelling part is where it falls apart. And I did, you know, and I, when you contacted me and said that you wanted to talk to this, I promised that I would attempt to sort of compartmentalize my feelings about the Scandiaman in theory, from like the story that's used to construct the series. I kind of quickly realized that that was easier said than done. You know what I mean? Because the Engstrom theory itself is so full of like plot holes, in my opinion, that of course the story, the series itself that's based on this theory is going to also be full of plot holes if that's the thing that you're leaning on. So it was hard actually to do that, but I'm trying.
but looking from, say, ethical point of view, to because they point out Stig Engström as a murderer, you can't there's no way that you can think anything else after seeing this series,
right?
I mean, I really don't. I'm just know that I don't like that they shove it in your face that he's the murderer, as you say. But how is it possible to for this to be, I mean, green light, it'd be okay when you point out a person and try to make him a murderer, paraphrasing a Netflix series. Please help me understand. I don't understand.
Well, I think there's probably a few answers to that question. For starters, I like I said, I know a lot of people who worked on the show. I also know people connected to the actual production side of the show. It's my understanding. Okay, first mistake that they made is that it's my understanding that this project went from being greenlit to actual production in less than a year. So there's your first problem.
And to help our listeners out, it is quick.
It's not only quick. It's virtually unheard of.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And especially for something like this, which is obviously kind of a historical thing, right? And I think that the mistake that they made is that they essentially chose to treat Thomas Pedersen's book as if it were the Bible, right? This is the literal Bible. Everything in this book is true. the police appear to agree with him as well. So how could we possibly get into trouble by saying essentially what the Swedish police have also said, right? Because they've more or less said the same thing. I mean, I'm sure Thomas Pettersson said more than I watched the press conference where they closed the case. It's like they almost said worse than nothing in that fucking press conference. It was ridiculous. But I also think that Netflix probably came at it from the perspective of, well, we're Netflix. What are you going to do? Sue us? And if you do, which two people are now, even if they lose, even if they lose this defamation case, even if they have to, whatever the monetary fine that they're going to have to pay, I guarantee you is going to be like a fraction of 1% in comparison to the number of people that will now be driven to the site to watch the show just to see what all the fuss is about. So again, it comes back to them. Netflix doesn't give a shit why you watch it. They just care that you watch it.
But I mean, you have Netflix as a distributor. You have, I think, FLX, the company, as a producer. Am I right?
Yep.
I mean, if something happens to the series, I mean, now they have got in trouble for pointing out Stig Engström as a murderer. Who will take the blame? Is it Netflix or is it FLX or is it, I mean, who will take the blame? If
Netflix will take the blame. Netflix owns 100% of the series. This is the way Netflix does business. Okay, so I'll give you an example of how most channels, when they do a show, there's all these different people involved who, once the show is made, continue to own a certain percentage of the show, right? So, like, for instance, when we did We Got This, SVT put up half of the money to do it. Jaroski came, the production company came with the other half, more or less. And then I retained a 15% share of the show because the idea that came out of my brain apparently is worth 15% of what you saw on the screen. Now, we don't have to argue about how crazy that is, but that's the basic, very sort of, you know, normal way that you sort of carve up the ownership of a show. Netflix operates in a completely different fashion. Netflix generally, when they go into a project, they do what's called an immediate buyout, which means that if I'm Netflix and you come to me with a show, I'm going to pay you upfront maybe a larger pile of money, but you're going to have to sign this contract saying that you no longer have any ownership rights over this show. I own the 100% of this show forever for the rest of time. And probably one of the most interesting examples that you see right now is there was an article written a few weeks ago by the guy who created The Squid Game, which is this other Netflix show, which has been like this huge sensation. So he signed that kind of deal. He got paid his buyout up front. And the fact that this is now the most popular show that has ever been on Netflix means absolutely nothing to him financially. He will never see another dime. He will not get any royalties. There's no reward for him having written a show that everybody in the world has watched. That's it. Netflix owns it. He gets nothing. He got what he got up front, and he'll never get another dime from it.
And I mean, we heard stories about him being like stressed out to the point where he kept losing teeth and hair and everything. He was, I mean, I don't know how much Aftonbladet and Expressen just built that up, but I mean, he put his soul into it, and now Netflix has the right to the series. I mean, he doesn't get anything then from merchandise or stuff like that.
Correct. That's correct. So in that scenario, you have shows like, you know, shows that we all grew up with, like Seinfeld and Friends. All of these actors who worked on those shows, all of the producers, all of the writers, they're still getting checks because those shows are being sold and resold year after year. No one will ever get another check from Netflix once the show has been bought out and made, ever.
And by that, you're also saying that if they run into legal problems, then they will have to take the blame, so to speak, or take the...
Yeah. They're the ones who put the money on the table. They're the ones who own it. They're the ones who have to face the legal issues or whatever. Now, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Netflix does a royalty deal with bigger writers and bigger actors. I don't know. I'm sure they have different rules for, you know, writers like Shonda Rhimes, for instance, I know is writing shows. Like, there may be a whole different deal for someone like Shonda Rhimes, but for the average person or the average, you know, production company, a full buyout is the usual way that they do business, as far as I've been told.
So if anything happens, then Netflix are to blame, so to speak. They have the legal responsibility. But do you think anything will happen? I mean, there are just a few people who has tried to sue Netflix for defamation of Stig Engström. How likely is it that something will happen out of it? I mean, they can always say that they have some kind of creative freedom or something. Or how do you see it?
I think it's very... I think that Netflix probably has enough lawyers to where they won't really have to face any consequences for this. And I think they will continue to produce material, local content out of Sweden. I would hope that they would sort of sit back and take stock about the mistakes that they've made on this particular show. But I don't know. I don't know enough people in the building to know if they're really like that, to be honest. But I have a hard time imagining that Netflix is going to be damaged in any way for this.
But I talked to Lasse Lampes, who worked with Veckans Brott in SVT, and he said that they could have done it, like one episode with Stig Engström as a possible murderer, one with Christer Pettersson, one with every suspect. I mean, then you wouldn't have pointed out just one person as a murderer. You would have pointed out, say, five different persons. But in that context, you also say that we, as you can see, we present five different people. All of them could be the murderer. We are not saying that any one of them are. I mean, that I kind of like that idea, because one... You stretch the story so much further, and two, you don't point out just one person.
Yeah, that was actually my original plan for We Got This. Or no, that was my second. That wasn't my first plan. That was my second plan, was that we would just address one theory at a time, so to speak. And then by the end of it, we would sort of unpack, like, what part of the theory, you know, because in all of these different theories, there's things that we know to be true, and there's things that we can only speculate about. That's the problem with all the Palma theories. Like, they're all incomplete, so to speak. That was one of the plans that I had. And then eventually I kind of worked away from that because what happened was is that I thought I had more episodes to work with. Initially, I had a plan to write 10 episodes. And then Jarosky wanted 8, and then SVT wanted 6. And as I went from 10 to 6, the idea of going through each theory one at a time became kind of impossible to do that in 6 episodes.
So you had that idea in mind. It's a good thing that I think it would have worked for this kind of show, because you're taking the, what should I say, you don't point the gun at one single person.
Yeah.
Okay, bad phrasing, but you say that you have five.
Yeah, great five. Metaphor. That was a good one.
Yeah, it was. I can. I realize now that I haven't spoken in English for quite a while, so I'm a bit rusty. But
that's funny.
Anyway. I mean, if you had got the chance to do a project like this, would you even have considered it, given that it is based on a true story and a true person?
No. No, I would have said no. Because given what they were trying to do, I just couldn't. Here's my theory. My thing with this is that, look, at some point, integrity has to come into the equation, right? The idea of, like, what are you willing to put your name on? Now, we know that Thomas Pettersson is willing to put his name on it. He already did that with his book. So he's more than happy to have his name put on it. But as far as the rest of it is concerned, I don't think, and to be honest, I'm a little surprised by, I'm so bad with names today. Who's the guy, the main guy who plays Stig Engström?
Robert Gustafsson.
Thank you. What little I know about him and his connection to the case, that he agreed to play this part. I know that he doesn't think that it's Candy Amanin, because he doesn't think that. He's been on record for decades saying that he is far more interested in the walkie-talkie man theory and the idea that the baseball league cops may be involved. Like, and then suddenly this press release comes of him playing Scandia Manon, and he's just out of nowhere acting like, well, actually, I think it's kind of an interesting, I never really thought about it much, and da, 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 da. And then when the show comes out, he goes back to his walkie-talkie theory in all of the interviews. And I'm like, okay, you know what? And to me, honestly, the only thing I can chalk that up to is that actors, I don't think I'm like breaking any eggs here. I mean, actors, a lot of actors will do anything as long as you point the camera at them. You know what I mean? And to be fair, I do think he's a very good actor. So I'm not saying he's not, I don't know how good he is in this, because he can't, my big issue with him in this is that they put him in so much fat makeup that he can't move his face. And if you can't move your face, then it's kind of hard to act if you can't move your face. But there are some moments in this show that really struck me where they do a close-up on him, and you can see how good of an actor he is just in his eyes. You can see it right in his eyes. You can see how good he is. But for me, it's the issue of integrity. I do not think, I have too much respect for the Palma legacy. I have too much respect for the Privat Spawnerers, who have spent decades of their lives dedicated to this case. I have too much respect for the real people involved in order for me to have said yes to something like this. I couldn't have done it.
But speaking from the same scenario as you had with We Got This, that you are portraying a real life event, if not a real life person. Are there any special considerations you have to take into in consideration? I mean, because you were working with the material that everyone that was born in 1986 or earlier knows a lot, a great deal of. What were your considerations? Mainly going into We Got This, maybe.
Yeah, my biggest difficulty in the creation of We Got This was the amount of sleep that I lost worrying about doing this the wrong way. My biggest fear is kind of back to what I was saying a minute ago, was disrespecting Palma the man, the Palma family. Something that I don't know if a lot of people know this, but my father died of brain cancer while I was developing We Got This. And this is not at all comparable to the way that Palma died. Obviously, the Palma family, you know, was obviously like in my head at the time as I was going through this. And I struggled a lot emotionally with the loss of my father, obviously. And I can say that I certainly would not want anyone coming along and making a TV series about my father choosing to play like fast and loose with the idea of his legacy, right? Because the thing is that the best way I can answer your question is to say that I personally think a story that's based on a historical event or historical people, it should be held to a much higher standard than all other stories, right? As a writer, you have an obligation to respect the people who suffered through the loss. And in this case, you have to throw all of Sweden into that category. The death of Olof Palme was an enormous loss for the entire country. And the more that I came to understand that, as I started to do more research, the more terrified I was of doing a bad job. The best sort of specific example that I could sort of point out, I think, would be this is sort of the moment that it all became really real for me. It was the first time I ever saw an interview with the woman who tried to save Palma's life, Anna Haga, I think is her name. I think it was around the 30th anniversary, or maybe it was when her book came out or something. I don't remember. Anyway, she described the night of the murder from her perspective in minute detail. The smell of the air, the way the blood felt on her fingers, the fear that she felt. And you could tell the way she talked about it, it was almost like it had happened yesterday. It was so clear to me that she's still deeply traumatized by this event. And at the time when I saw that interview, I had a storyline, a fictional version of her in one of the early drafts of We Got This that was sort of woven into the storyline. And I saw that interview the next day. I got up, I went to the office, and I ripped all those pages out of the script. And I said, this has to go. I can't do it. It's wrong. I can't. I just couldn't do it. You know, obviously for us, we played around fast and loose with some of the details, and we did some smart things in the sense that we changed a lot of details. We changed a lot of names. We were really careful to avoid any kind of critical treatment of Lisbeth Palme, despite the fact that there are some sort of weird things like her sort of her relationship with the police. I always thought was like something that made me scratch my head quite often, but we just kind of avoided it altogether. I tried to include more about the baseball league cops, like more in the actual storyline, but that became problematic. SVT wasn't okay with that. I had an early version where I actually had Craig Williamson in the story. Like I wrote his name and I was going to have a character playing Craig Williamson. And then SVT was like, oh, you can't do that. I was like, what? Really? You think Craig Williamson's going to sue us? And they looked at me dead serious and said, no, we're actually afraid he's going to try to kill you. I was like, what? I was like, I really don't think Craig Williamson's going to try to kill me. I mean, we fought a lot, me and SVT. It was all good natured. And I can say now, with the benefit of hindsight, looking back, I can say that in some cases they were totally right. And I'm really glad that they pushed me to do some of the things that I did. I can also say that there were some cases where I feel like I was right. We had a very healthy debate. And we were good people who were just trying to do the best thing. We all had the right intentions. I can't really sit here and tell you that I think that everybody who worked on this unlikely murderer thing, I can't sit here and say that they went through this process with the best of intentions, which I think is why they find themselves in this legal trouble today, to be honest.
If we compare this series to your series in just one respect, I mean, you created and played in We Got This, and it got a huge crowd in Sweden and even internationally. You won a few prizes in Europe and even overseas, was it? Or
yeah, well, the year the show came out, we made the Variety top 10 list for best international shows of 2020. We won a couple of different film festivals for best series. I personally won the one that I'm maybe the most proud of is that I won the European Script Award for 2020 for having written the best TV series. And that was the reason why I get kind of a little more nerdy and excited about that one, is because they didn't even watch the show. All they did was read the scripts. And to me, that's like, I mean, that's a real skill to be a script writer. Not everybody can do it. You know what I mean? And I feel like I've paid my dues and I've worked really hard to become good at it. And it was really nice to win an award for it. It's easy to trick people with a pretty picture. I personally think that this Unlikely Murderer show is tricking a lot of people by how beautiful it looks, and they're not seeing what's wrong with the actual script. So for me, that was the one that I feel the most proud of, I think.
Yeah, sure. But if you look at Den Osannolike Mördaren, The Unlikely Murderer, do you see the same route or success that series? I mean, we can only guess, of course, but I mean, you both series touches the same subject, at least in two different ways, of course, but still, what do you see in the future for Den Osannolike Mördaren, if you could guess?
Well, my guess is that they'll get a lot of views. I'm sure it'll be very well. You can already see, you know, when We Got This came out, you know, SVT doesn't really have the ability to sort of promote a show internationally in the same way. The production company obviously has the ability to do that. But they don't have the same kind of ability that someone like Netflix does. And also Netflix, when Netflix releases a show, they release a show globally, like immediately, you know, whereas we put ours out in Sweden and then eventually it kind of travels the world slowly but surely. It pops up here, it pops up there, it pops up, you know, that kind of thing. So I would imagine the show will be quite successful. And also given the fact that, you know, the police investigation is basically, or the way the police the way the Palma case closed, the story they gave us back on June 10th is more or less the same story that Thomas Pettersson wrote in his book. So the story, the show itself will benefit by having what appears to be kind of an authoritative position on the case, right? It's like, well, this is what the cops said, so it must be true. And then you have all these people out here who are watching the show who don't know anything about the Palma case. They don't know that there are competing theories. They don't know that there are far better books and far better researchers who have discovered way more than what Thomas Pettersson has laid out in his book. I've gotten a lot of emails and messages from friends in the States who obviously know that they all saw my show. And they're like, hey, what's the deal with this show? And I'm like, oh, God, do you have a minute? Like, pack a lunch, because here's the deal. Like, you know what I mean?
So they don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I think Netflix will benefit from a large sense of ignorance. I don't mean that in a rude way. I just mean purely in the pure definition of the word. That there's just so many people who don't know anything about the Palma case. So if you tell them that this is what the cops thought, then they're going to think that the story's true, which is why I think the show is a little dangerous in that sense. I think it's propaganda, to be honest. I think it sort of falls right into the category of propaganda.
My biggest problem, I think, with the series is that when you and your cast and co-writers and stuff did your series, you did it with a lot of heart and with, it really felt, you can feel the warmth and the heart in the series. And I don't feel the same thing about Den Osannolike Mördaren. It feels, as you say, maybe much, much colder in the sense that the money talks instead of the heart, I think.
Right. I cannot tell you how glad I am to hear you say that. Because one of the things that I wanted to mention in this conversation, my biggest problem with the script is that it has no soul. It has no soul. It doesn't have a soul. It doesn't have a heart. It has no real sense of the historical gravity of the Palma murder. half of the time, you know, especially at the police department in the scenes that they do there, you don't even get a real sense of panic that you would expect, given the prime minister has just been shot, right? And it certainly doesn't match up with the things that I read about what was going on at the police station after Palma was shot. Not to mention, they basically treat Olof Palma like he's an extra in his own murder, for fuck's sake. Right? So here's the thing. When I say that the script has no soul, maybe that's a weird thing for some of your listeners to sort of grasp, but the best way I can describe it, in humans, we like to think that we're born with a soul, so to speak, right? Scripts are not like that. Scripts and screenplays are not like that. The soul of a script usually doesn't come into shape until like the third or fourth draft, right? That's when the story starts to come together. It's when it starts to find its rhythm. It's when it starts to find its purpose, right? And going back to what I had said earlier, given that the show went from green light to production in like less than a year, it shouldn't surprise anyone that these scripts don't have a soul. I can't really tell you why I know this, but I do know someone who knows the writers, and I know that the guys who wrote the show, who are actually very good screenwriters, and if you had given them the time to do this, I think they would have done it in a better way. They were privately kind of freaking out because they essentially shot the first draft of the script, which is also unheard of. And I also know that based on some of the people that I know that worked on the production, they were literally rewriting the script as they were filming, delivering new pages every day, because they didn't take the time to get it right from the first place. So that's why but that explains why the script has no heart and it has no soul. They're not born that way.
No, exactly. And to be clear, we're not pointing our fingers at anyone specific in the production, but the whole production, the production as a whole, and the tempo made the final production be, yeah, as you say, without a soul, without a heart.
It's my understanding that Netflix created this scenario, this time plan to go from script to production. The reason why they did it so quickly was I don't know if we got this had anything to do with it. I think the primary reason actually is that they, once the case was closed and they realized, okay, the Palma case says Skandiamannen. We own the rights to a book that also says Skandiamannen. We need to produce this show as quickly as possible. We will greenlight it if you can make it in less than a year, because we want to make sure that people haven't forgotten. People haven't moved on. So for them, it could not have happened fast enough.
So the best thing they would hope for, it would be that the series would be done in, say, August 2020, right after the press conference almost.
Well, if they had been smart, I don't know anything about what Thomas Pedersen did or how long it took him to have these conversations, but if they had been smart and dumb and lucky all at the same time, then, you know, they would have started making their show when I made mine, which, you know, I consider myself actually to be quite smart, dumb, and lucky, given that my show came out in the middle of the case being closed. You know what I mean? Like, so that was like, I mean, I couldn't have planned that. You know what I mean? It's like, that I didn't know that. I just remember, like, in that February when we were in post-production, like just editing the show, and the head of the Palma Group comes out and says, we're going to close the case in 6 months. And we were all sitting there going, holy shit, what if he closes it while the show's on TV? This is crazy. And they did. I was just like, oh my God.
We talked about this and the first time we talked in Stockholm, and we talked about, yeah, your series became sort of a, I don't know, but you can't say soundtrack about a series, but a soundtrack to the Paul McCain's solution in some way. I don't know. You know what I mean.
It was a weird scenario, and it was more than a little bizarre to be getting phone calls from TV4 asking me to come on and be a Palma expert the day after the case closed. I was like, oh my God. I was like, I'm sorry, you realize that I just made this show up. Like, I just pulled this idea out of my ass. I do not consider myself a Palma expert. I was almost like, is Leif Givi Persson dead? Like, why are you calling me? Did somebody cancel? What's going on here?
Let's talk a bit about, we got this, because you got very good reviews all over. I would say, I have not heard one single review that hasn't been very good. And also, as you said, you won a number of prizes. And as I understand it, you also became involved with one of these film festivals as a member of the jury. Am I right?
Yeah, that's true, actually. So let's see. It was, the year the show came out, we were nominated for an award and we won for best series at this it was a film festival in Barcelona called Siria Lesados. So we won for best series, and then they decided to invite me to come down and be on the jury this year to pick which series was going to win this year at the festival. So that was kind of cool. That was maybe a month ago, I guess. It was a nice little break. You know as well as I do that October and November are not really the best times to be in Sweden. Being invited to Barcelona in end of October was a ideal situation, I would say.
So
nice.
Don, if you're listening to this, could we do a script writing session in Barcelona, maybe?
You should, man. Put that on the company. Put it on the company card, dude. That
yeah, sure. I've always heard as a journalist that dig where you are standing, gräv där du står. So I mean, if we try to solve, or at least take a look at the CIA, for example, we have to go to the States. If we will have a look at South Africa, we have to go to South Africa. I mean, I don't think you can't do a good job in Sweden talking about South Africa. You have to be there.
Yeah, and that was also one of the things that I wanted to do. One of my original plans was that I wanted to actually have an episode where our little gang of four weirdos actually got on a plane and went to South Africa. SVT said no to that. We did go to America, actually, so that was fun for the last episode. But I think you're right, actually. And that's why I felt like, the more time that passed, and then obviously after Anki Larsson passed away, for me, the idea of doing a version of We Got This, but about the JFK murder started to make more sense to me. Right. And I know we've had that conversation before, and I'm still interested in doing that. But for me, I think that project is more like my Moby Dick, my white whale, so to speak, that I think I need to do a few more things before I start pushing that idea. But I still would like to do it. And actually, to be honest with you, I would kind of like to collaborate with Oliver Stone on that.
Ooh, the director of JFK, the movie.
I'm a little obsessed with the idea, because I know that, obviously Oliver Stone has made JFK. I know he's also working on, or soon to release, actually, a big documentary about the JFK assassination. And I have this like dream sort of bucket list scenario where I would love to have a meeting with Oliver Stone and say, look, you've taken the pure drama approach and you've taken the documentary approach. How would you like to take the satirical comedy approach at looking at the JFK case and still investigate the case within the context of the actual narrative, but also take the opportunity to like poke and prod and make fun of all the crazy things that have happened inside of that case over the last however many decades?
I would love that.
I would love that too. And I'm working, I haven't asked, I, I haven't asked my agent in the States to do that yet, but the day that I decide to take that project seriously, I'm going to call them and say, I know this sounds crazy, but can you get Oliver Stone on the phone for me, please? So we'll see. We'll see if that happens.
Ja, vad tror ni? Kommer vi att få se Skiff och Oliver Stone samarbeta i framtiden? Den som lever får se. Hur som helst, stort tack till Schiaffino Mosera för den här intervjun. Glöm inte att ni kan kontakta oss på adressen poddenpalmemordet@gmail.com med tips, idéer och mycket mer. Det är alltså poddenpalmemordet@gmail.com. Vi försöker svara så snabbt vi kan, men prioriterar såklart alltid avsnitten om tiden är knapp. Ni kan också kommentera dagens avsnitt på Facebook genom att gå med i Studio Palmemordet och sedan leta upp tråden om dagens avsnitt. Slutligen kan ni också sponsra oss om ni så önskar. Alla sätt att stötta oss på finns i avsnittsbeskrivningen. Det här var veckans avsnitt av podden Palmemordet som idag gjordes av mig, Tobias Henriksson på PRS Media. För mer information om mig och mina projekt besök facebook.com/prsmedia.se eller gilla oss på Instagram där vi heter PRS Media, ett ord, små bokstäver. Återigen ett stort tack till Skiff för medverkan i dagens avsnitt. Men framförallt, stort tack för att du lyssnar på podden Palmemordet.
Man hittar Palmes mördare om man följer PKK-spåret till botten.
För att ända sedan Julius Caesars tid har aldrig hört talas om ett mord på en framstående politiker som inte har politiska skäl.
Polisens och åklagarens teori var att han ensam hade skjutit Olof Palme. Och det ledde också till rättegång, men han frikändes i hovrätten.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.